two or three weeks ago, I don't remember exactly what it was. It was something, and I don't remember what I was doing. And I thought to myself, I think I got something like this. And I thought, well, I'll go see what I can find out in the toolbox. And that made me think about a number of other things. And I thought, tools, toolbox, that kind of thing. And I thought how there's so much of this that can be classified as things. I used to be in what was called electrical maintenance man on the night shifts. I was the only one on whatever night shift it was. And so I used a bunch of different tools, whatever the work and count it demanded. And that was just part of it. And all the other people that had ever had that job, same thing with them. Now think about this for a minute. Does the mechanic who works on your car, you ever been back there in the shop, does he have a lot of tools? How about a plumber or the HVAC tech that comes to your house? He'll bring a tool bag and it'll have a number of tools in there that he needs for his work. And then a farmer. I have never been on a farm or in a farmer's shop ever, any place at any time, where they didn't have tools just scattered all over. All over. You know, they've got lots of them. I'm sure that since they're scattered all over the place, they have duplicates too. But anyway. Then, how about this? The doctor or the dentist. Do they have tools? Sure. Now, I dare say that a cook or chef has many things that easily qualify as tools. I don't know much about cooking or being a chef, but I recognize that to be true. And I don't mean to be channeling a Geico ad here, but even cavemen had tools at some point. And then, so we get over to spiritual matters, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, the devil has a toolbox. And that led to this sermon for tonight. I've got here 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 11, and you may have already thought about that. But 2 Corinthians chapter 2 verse 11 says, "Lest Satan should get an advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices," or "we are not ignorant of his schemes," some translations have. And included in those devices or schemes are a number of things that he uses. Tools, if you will. And so he's well equipped, and we should be well equipped as well. And it says here we shouldn't be ignorant of this. And of course, if we're not ignorant of it, then we're better equipped to meet some of these things whenever they come about. Now, the first thing I'd like for us to do tonight is just to consider the devil's work for a moment or two. We're probably all familiar with the passage over in John chapter 8 and verse 44, where Jesus says, considering the devil, he's the father of lies. Now, I think what that means is that he's the one that's over all lies. He's the inventor of lies. He's the originator of lies. If you recall in the garden, he told Eve, "Thou shalt not surely die." There we go. The first lie, and he's been lying ever since. Don't count on him for the truth at all. And if he does, on occasion, not accidentally, it'll be a deliberate use of something that's the truth. He'll use it in such a way, even then, to deceive. And we'll see how that works in just a little bit. But everything about the devil and related to him is evil. Let's look at some of the things that are said. For example, in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 4, he's called the god of this world. And what else do we find? Well, in Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 2, he's the prince of the power of the air. Now, some translations will have world instead of the air, but you get the idea. That's who it's talking about. And it shows the extent of his evil. And then, to top it all off, the New American Standard Bible in 1 John chapter 5 and verse 19 says this: "The whole world lies in the power of the evil one." Now, it doesn't mean that the whole world is powerless,
But it's over there in His power, in His authority, where He can use these things. He's not going to use them in a good way. And so we see all this. And then, to top it all off, there's the whole description, what I've always considered to be the whole description of Satan, is in Revelation chapter 12, and in verse 9, it also talks about his work here, where it says, the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent, well, the serpent, all the way back to the beginning, called the devil and Satan, devil and Satan, same ones, and then it says, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And they've all been working on one particular thing to deceive as many people as possible. He uses the things of the world. He practices lies, especially in the area of deception. That's his whole method, if you will, which is actually our next point. The devil's, we talk about the devil's method of things. It's called deception, or in the King James Version, it has subtlety. 2 Corinthians, again, this time, chapter 11, and verse 3, which says, I fear, lest by any means, as the serpent beguiled Eve, or deceived Eve, through his subtlety, so your mind should be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. Deception. Subtlety. That's right. And in a way that to take something and make it appear as though it's acceptable. You know, that's the whole point of whatever is called temptation. It's to make something that's wrong seem to be right and to convince people of this. Subtlety. Probably you might even think, I always think of the word like it, charming, you know, sweeping someone off of their feet, that kind of thing. Now, 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 14, it talks just a moment there about how Eve was deceived. It says Adam wasn't deceived. Eve was deceived. We have no, we know for sure that Eve was deceived. That's clear. When she took of the fruit and ate of it, then it says that she gave it to her husband and he did eat. So he became part of the sin that had taken place, eating of the fruit and so on. But he wasn't deceived by the devil. I think he went along with her. I have no idea how she did this. I don't know how she got him to do that. He had heard the same things that she heard. And she knew exactly what God had said, which makes me think that he knew exactly what God said. I don't know what the motive would have been here or anything like that. But now, it wasn't deception. He was more just, you know, just willing to go along. I don't know what it was. Was it weakness? You know, did he practice coercion? We can't say that either. But, you know, there was deception. Yes, there was deception with Eve, that's clear. And that's how the devil's been doing things all along. It's still there in 2 Corinthians 11. Drop down to verse 14 and 15. Now, it talks about those who are deceitful workers in verse 13 and how they transform themselves into the apostles of Christ. Now, of course, that means they're putting up this facade. But it seems to people that they are the very apostles of Christ. And then it says, verse 14, and no marvel about this, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. It's deception. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as the ministers of righteousness. Not really, but though that they look like this. And it says, whose end shall be according to their works. So the devil's method, subtlety, deception, he goes through other agents beside himself, and you know what? They do the same thing. No difference here. And then another thing about his method, and we know this is the one I think that probably everybody knows without failure, and that's in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8, where the devil walks around like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. If you've ever watched one of these shows on television where they're following lions and filming them, and perhaps there's a herd out there, and you watch them, you know, when they see the herd, they don't just run in there right off the bat and grab the first antelope or whatever it is that they happen to see. They don't do it that way. No, they stalk the herd. And a lot of times the herd knows that the lion's there. They can generally maybe smell the lion in the bush. But that's where he's at. He's over there in the bush. Why is he over there in the bush? Because, well, there he can hide. Sound like deception to you? And he can sneak around. Sound like subtlety? And so the lion does. Why is he doing that? Well, he's staking out the herd. Looking for someone in the herd. Looking for the animal in there. And eventually, he'll pick that one out. And once they pick that out, they will never take their gaze off the target. And it is only whenever they then have the target picked out, after a good bit of time, and when they get close enough to make their rush, only then do they roar. They're not over there roaring. It's not like one of those old black and white Tarzan movies where the lion's over there roaring his head off the whole time. They don't do it that way. You know, he roars when he goes to attack. And that is to just cause as much confusion as possible. And maybe they'll run into each other. Maybe they'll run the wrong way. Who knows? But by the time he's letting out that roar, he's full speed right at his target. That's how he does it. So he's going to kind of follow us and observe us and realize the weaknesses and so on. And he's going to look for the right time whenever he can make his move. Now let's talk a little bit about his tools. We'll get down to some specifics here. They're referred to as devices or schemes. Now that word that's translated there as either devices or schemes means something like this. Mr. Thayer offers a multiple of explanations. He says that it can be a mental perception, a thought, a perception, a mental perception. And most of the time with perceptions, you know, they're true. You know, you've got the right perception about something. But a lot of times, a perception is not necessarily true. But he also goes on to say that the word there, as devices or schemes in the original language, carries with it that behind this, there might be just an evil purpose. And of course, with the devil, that's what it is. And then he goes on in his third possibility, and he just ropes everything in and says, that which thinks, the mind, thoughts, or purposes. Now, if you look at all this, you realize that these devices or schemes, they involve thought and actions. He wants to capture our thoughts. He captures our thoughts. He's captured our actions. Captures our thoughts. And we can be steered in certain directions. That's what it's all about. Now, some of these, I guess you could say, getting down to some specifics, if you will. But we find out in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15 and 16, it talks about the things that are in the world. And it says they're not of the Father. What things? The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, the pride of life. That's what the devil uses. Those are the things that he uses. They're tools in his toolbox. But I think that it's kind of interesting when you look at this, and it's all that is in the world. Now remember at the beginning we looked at some of the descriptions of the devil and about him and his work. The god of this world, the prince of the power of the air, in other words, the world. And all of the world lies in the power of the devil. And what do we, all that is in the world. It's not of the Father. Who's it of? It doesn't say in those passages it's of the devil. What's your alternative if they're not of the Father? Of what, you see? So it goes along with other things that are said in the New Testament. Get the idea across. You know, the lust of the eye, the lust of the flesh, the pride of life, those are things the devil uses. They're his tools, his weapons, if you will. And then also, we go back to the temptation of Jesus. You remember the occasion of this? Jesus, after his baptism, separated himself, and the Spirit led him up into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. I say he separated himself. You don't see anybody else there in the mention of Jesus till the devil comes along. And Jesus fasted 40 days and nights, and afterward, he says, and he was afterward hungered. I thought to myself, yeah, I suppose so. That's almost, you know, the latter part of that. Just, boy, that's not an understatement. I don't think there's any understatements. But the tempter comes along here. The devil. That's who it is, you know. It's temptation. He's going to be tempted of the devil. And that's what the devil uses. He uses temptation. I've said before, he takes something that's wrong and tries to make it right. And sometimes takes something that's right in and of itself, but then puts this twist on it to get it to be used in a different way. You know, one of the things that we've got out here in the world that's really not wrong in and of itself. As a matter of fact, it's got many good uses to it. You ever thought about it? Alcohol? Good uses? I mean, for years, it's been known as the best common antiseptic going. You can buy it in the bottles. It's inexpensive. And we use it. We can use it on cuts. We can use it, you know, to... In just so many different ways. We use it in mouthwash. You know, mouthwash is just about all of it's alcohol, except for a little bit of flavoring and other things along that line. But the biggest element in there, the biggest part of it, is alcohol. It's something that's good. It's got a good, proper usage to it. But it's not always used that way, is it? No, put this twist on it and everything, and what is it? Well, with that twist put on it and everything, it's become just the scourge of mankind. It causes poor health, ultimately death in some cases. But just think of all the misery in the world that there is that goes along with that. All of it that's created. Abuses in families, abuse of a husband or wife, children, divorce, adultery, fornication, just think of all of it. Theft and robbery and everything that you can think of. I remember reading an account of a murder in a church building, Church of Christ, in Dallas, Texas. And the man that did the murder, he did this, it was politically motivated. But the man that did the murder went to the service to attend, and he intended to kill this one man who was an elder in the congregation. And to prepare himself for this, of course, he took a gun with him. But now, what else did he have to prepare himself to kill this man? Well, he consumed a good amount of alcohol to bolster him up, I guess, so he could go in and do a dastardly deed like this. You just stop and think about it. Robbery, break-ins, car wrecks where people that are just driving along with their family. I mean, we hadn't been in West Virginia hardly any time at all. And right up above where we lived, they always called it the four lane. Right up there, there was a family coming along. I don't know, they'd been someplace. Typical family. They're going home. And a man who was inebriated went up there, went to turn to go down toward town, and got in the wrong two lanes and drove down over the hill and hit this family head on. That family of four, on their way home, all of them were killed. Of course. The man who was intoxicated, not harmed at all. What caused it? What had a great hand in doing this? But this kind of thing happens. It's involved with temptation, making something even that's right and using it in the wrong way. There's so many things that happen. And another thing we find here is he uses doubt. Look at what he does with Jesus. There in verse 3. The tempter, obviously tempting, came to him and said, "If thou be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread." You see that? If you're the Son of God. If you are. Is an element of doubt kind of injected into this? Prove yourself. Turn these stones into bread. And you're saying that to someone who's fasted for 40 days and it says is hungry? Well, sure. Man, I knew for a number of years Marshall Patton loved to hear him. He would always talk about this and always talk about that. I probably said this before. Bear with me. But he would always look at that and he'd say, he said, "I've never been to where I've been without a meal for 40 days. He always would say, "Look at me and tell that." But anyway. So he said, "I can't hardly associate with that, but I've been plenty hungry sometimes." And another thing he said, "I have never on occasion looked at a stone and thought how good it might taste." And I've always wondered, did the Lord look at that? Because the Lord had power to do that. That's not the issue here. The issue is that the devil's interjecting doubt into his mind. Jesus knew he was the Son of God. He didn't have to prove anything. And not to the devil. Brother Patton would go on to say, "I've never eaten bread that has been made out of stones. But I have eaten bread that has been turned into stones a time or two." I always thought, I'm sure we all have. You look at it that way. Little humor there. But the doubt that's involved here. And then later on, as you go down through here and look at another temptation, this time in verses 5 and 6, and this I think is even the greater of all three temptations. The devil takes him up into the holy city and setteth him on a pinnacle of the temple and said to him, "If you are the Son of God," there's that doubt again, "cast yourself down. For it is written, he shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou dash thy foot against a stone." You know, he's using Psalms 91, verse 11 and 12, and he's using them, he's quoting them just as they are. He's not adding anything, he's not taking anything out of it, but he's misusing it. That's not what the passages meant. Not the passages weren't saying, you can go up here and throw yourself off of the highest place in Jerusalem and no harm will come to you. God will keep that from happening. That's not what the passages were for, but he's using them that way. Now this tells us a couple of things. Number one, that the devil will even resort to using something that you might be familiar with. And it sounds right. As a matter of fact, as we said before, it might be right, but he's using it in the wrong way and putting a twist on it. But he knows the scriptures, doesn't he? And I think that's the thing that's scary about this. The very thing that we think is going to help us out, give us guidance, tell us what to do, instruct us, so we will be able to resist the devil. The very thing there. He can take some of this and use it in a way to defeat us. That's what he's doing with Jesus here. And all the while, injecting this element of doubt in there. Get you to try and prove something. And again, Jesus, he didn't have to prove anything whatsoever. And all these things I'll give unto you. The last one, I don't have it here on the slide. But the last thing, all these things, I'll give them unto you if you'll bow down and worship me. I think to myself, well, this is probably the weakest of the three. Because we should know that, first of all, Jesus doesn't need all these things and everything that you can see. He's already the master of all of them. So he's really offering him nothing. And that one, I think, would be the weakest of the three. And then what else do we find? Now, not to labor the point, but you can go over here to Galatians chapter 5, verses 19 through 21, where the whole list is over there, and they're called the works of the flesh. Not of the Father, but of the devil, of the world, the works of the flesh. There's not a thing in all those listings over there, and the list varies from translation to translation, how many there actually are. But when you look at the list, whether it's a shorter list or a longer list, whatever the list is, all those things in there are recognized to be sins. And they're works of the flesh. And, you know, a lot of those things over there, there's a certain appeal to them. When we're weak, or when we're wavering, or when we're not as faithful as we should be. And even at times, you know, I think I sympathize with this, and probably at some time or another, we can understand this ourselves. When someone comes along and they're just in anguish over something. How did I do that? How did this happen? I can't believe I did this. How did it happen? Well, you let down your guard, and the devil comes along, and he attacks. And he doesn't play fair. He fights dirty every time. He'll wait till you think all is safe. Kind of like a soldier, you know. Sometimes there have been soldiers who think that it's all is safe as they're facing out where the enemy's at. And they think, well, there's no harm out here now. And what they do? Well, then they turn around and head back for the campfire. Roman soldiers were equipped with all the fighting gear they possibly needed. And it was all out here in front of them. You know, they didn't have anything to protect the back. All they had to protect the shins and the feet and the arms and the chest. And they had that big shield. And they had weapons that they would carry, mostly in behind the shield, until they got close enough for hand-to-hand combat. But what about behind them? They didn't have anything back there. And so if they thought everything was safe, and they'd turn around to head for that safety of the campfire, so to speak, that's when the enemy will strike. When your guard's down, when you think that you're safe, when we think, oh, I'm just so secure in the faith and so strong in the faith, nothing can happen to me. And that's when the penny drops in the slot. Because right after that's when you let your guard down. And the devil, that lion that's stalking you, he's looking for that. And that's when he'll come along. And those works of the flesh, they have an appeal to us. We'll turn towards them. And then we expose our vulnerability. But those are the tools that he has. And he'll use them. And he'll use them effectively. And the thing of it is, we know what they are. We can see this. And you think to yourself, he doesn't really have any new tools, does he? No. Why have new tools when the ones that he's got and he's been using for centuries have been so successful? Why would you do that? Now, our last point is for us to take heart. We're not powerless. Part of the model prayer is that we pray, lead us not into temptation. I don't think that means that the Lord is actually going to lead us into temptation. But I think He's the one that can lead us through and out of temptation. We talked in class this morning how people need leadership. And our leadership is the Lord. I believe when we think about leading us not into temptation, how can He do this to help us? I think He's done it by facing temptation Himself in Matthew chapter 4 that we looked at just a few moments ago. We also realize that when those temptations come along, there is, as Paul writes, a way of escape. It comes along kind of with the temptation. There's an opportunity to escape. You know, it's not this old thing that like you watch, if you watch the Star Wars or if you watch a Star Trek movie, whichever one it is. You know, they've got these things and they're up there in space somewhere and they're going along just fine under their own power and everything's just wonderful. And all of a sudden, they're in a tractor beam. It always amazes me how they've got this ability to go 8 or 9 times the speed of light. And yet, a tractor beam can get onto that ship. Boy, they can't even move. I mean, they're just powerless against this and drawn in. That's not how this is. There's a way of escape that comes. The temptation, it might make a try at us, and maybe we feel the pull just a little bit, but there's a way of escape. You're not just pulled all the way in at warp speed. No, there's always opportunities at the very beginning to avoid the temptation, to flee the temptation. I always think of Joseph, Potiphar's wife. She's after him for a long time. And she finally thinks, now's the time, my husband's gone, there's nobody here, who's going to know? Come and lay with me. Oh, he won't have any part of it. How can I do this? And sin against your husband, sin against God. How can I do this? And what does he do? He leaves it. Leaves it, and he leaves it so suddenly that he left his garment in her hands, which means she had a hold of him, trying to pull him over there to her. Flee fornication, we're told in the New Testament. Always think of Joseph in a case like that. We're not powerless. There's always a way of escape. It's there. It's available. I think it's available for everyone. I think that just sometimes some folks just don't want to see it, maybe. And they've already made up their mind. And they enter into temptation, it says. They've bypassed the way of escape. And now they're going headlong in there. Now that tractor beam's really got them. When you give up on the way of escape. And for all the simplicity, I said this one time, I'll never forget. I was talking about this one Sunday night in Arkansas. I had a visitor there. One of our members' sister from Florida. And I just happened to mention that years ago, one of the things that Nancy Reagan got involved with, the just say no to drugs. I thought, boy, how simple that is. Just say no. And when temptation, something comes along, just say no. But there you go. There's an opportunity for a way of escape. Just say no to it at the beginning. And don't get pulled in. Because then when you're pulled in, then it becomes harder to do that. And that's what I said. And this lady came along and said, well, there's more to it. Sometimes it's more complicated than saying no. I didn't say it wasn't. But I know this. At the very beginning, you can say no. And that's not very complicated. And if you say no, and your actions really are no, the opportunities for success in resisting is going to be extraordinarily high. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 26 and verse 41 to watch, that's to be aware, be alert, and pray that you enter not into temptation. So there's a way of escape, lead us not into temptation. And here he's telling us, is this part of how you do it? That you watch and pray that you don't enter into temptation? I've always thought about entering into temptation. You know, it's kind of like you're crossing that line. When there's temptation that presents itself, sometimes you might be able to avoid it, sometimes you can't. Sometimes, you know, the temptation is just kind of thrown right out there in front of you. It just, there it is. You know, what do you do now? You know, it's like watching a ball game or a hockey game on TV. And, you know, I mean, there's hardly anything salacious going on at a hockey game, you know. But they'll cut away from that to a commercial, and then the next thing you know, wow, you know, look at what this commercial is. And it is salacious. And how do you do it? Somebody says, well, change the channel. Well, if you can do it that fast. I'm not that fast on the remote. You see a little bit of it. You know. But when you sit there and just decide I'm going to watch the whole thing and just stay with it, or whatever it is for the long haul, you've made a choice to enter into the temptation. And then all that's ahead then is trouble. You read in James chapter 1. First of all, we're tempted. Then what happens? Well, there's lust and all this and everything that leads into this. And then there's, you know, and then what happens? And then there's sin. And when sin's full grown, well, there's death at the end of that, separation from God. Look what happens when you enter into temptation. So watch and pray. That's part of the ability we have. We're not powerless. And then finally, James chapter 4 and verse 7. Made mention of that earlier. If you resist the devil, he will flee from you. And we know that that's possible because, again, that's what Jesus did in Matthew chapter 4 at the very end of this. In verse 11, it says, then the angel leaveth him, and behold, angels came and ministered unto him. Left him. And so you can resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Take your songbooks, turn to the songs been selected. The opportunity is yours, if you have a desire to obey the gospel tonight, to do so. Or, if you already are a child of God, that you might equip yourself, be ready and willing, and we hope everybody's able to resist the devil. Remember, he's got a toolbox that's well supplied, well equipped, and he knows how to use those things. But we're not powerless. We have things to answer with as well. If we can assist anybody with anything, please let us know. All together, we stand and sing.